This is All Sides with Anna Staver on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Anna today. Last night was one of the most anticipated political events in quite some time. It was anticipated because of the last debate on June 27th when Joe Biden had a disastrous performance. He soon left the race, clearing the way for Kamala Harris to be the Democratic nominee. And last night was her first chance to take on former President Donald Trump directly in this remarkable 2024 presidential campaign. And while it may not have been as historic as the June 27th debate, it certainly was a memorable debate. Here are two of the key moments.
And I'm going to actually do something really unusual, and I'm going to invite you to attend one of Donald Trump's rallies because it's a really interesting thing to watch. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom. And I will tell you, the one thing you will not hear him talk about is you.
And look at what's happening to the towns all over the United States. In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
Springfield, Ohio. Key role in the debate. Of course, that is not true. There is no evidence that Haitian immigrants are killing and eating pets, but that did not stop former President Donald Trump from raising it in that presidential debate. We will, this hour, we will try to digest all that we saw and heard in last night's presidential debate. And joining us now is Tom Lobianco, founder of 24Site News on Substack. And he's the author of the Mike Pence biography, Piety and Power. Tom Lobianco, welcome to All Sides.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You know, leading up to the debate, here's what you said. You said the key for Harris would be whether she could bait Trump into being Trump and whether a reined-in teleprompter Trump would show up. I think we all know what happened.
I mean, it's a presidential debate, and it might be the last presidential debate between those two. And my God, this campaign, 2024, here we are talking about whether cats and dogs are being fricasseed across the country. She baited him incredibly well. I mean, more than I think the Democrats could have ever hoped for. And he just fell right into it.
You know, you could have predicted it, I guess, because he hasn't really changed since 2015 when he entered the race. He is who he is. We didn't know who Kamala Harris was. But, right. You know, watching the debate, people made a lot of it. And we noticed it right at the start. She went over and shook his hand. He didn't want to do that.
Yes.
And right from the get-go, in hindsight, you could say that was her strategy right away to play offense. Don't play defense.
Absolutely. And, you know, with the expectations game going into it and so much the talk about whether the mic's being muted, I mean, this was a debate before the debate between the two campaigns over the rules. Would that matter? Would that not matter? You know, as you note here with the body cues, the physical cues, that's what the what viewers at home see when they look at that split screen and they see her exuding confidence, walking over and making the first move. And you actually saw Trump withdraw, like he didn't know how to handle it. And, you know, with that massive national audience, you know, one of the things I've written about over at the my daily newsletter, 24Site, called the 24/7, is that this Trump amnesia that we hear about so much, where, you know, over the past decade of his dominance on the national political scene, flooding the zone with BS and chaos and things which are, you know, like the cats and dogs, which are demonstrably inaccurate. This is not right. Has created this tuning out effect for a lot of the electorate, to the point where things which to him seem normal, talking about these stories about Hannibal Lecter and, you know, dodging sharks and electric batteries and whatnot. For a lot of the populace, this is their first time hearing about it. And if you are someone who's on the fence, a soft Trump voter, as they say, and you tune in and you hear him saying that immigrants are eating domesticated animals, And yeah, you probably don't have any context for it other than that. And it sounds like, the middle of COVID, bleach in the veins. It sounds like all of those crazy moments from when he used to constantly be in front of people, and it's a reminder of the past.
Yeah, I mean, the media is bears, I don't want to call it responsibility, but the media has changed how we cover Donald Trump. When he ran in
Significantly.
2016, he was on all the time because ratings would
Yes.
spike. That's why he was on live on all the cable nets. And then media took so much criticism for basically giving him free airtime during that campaign. And even
Yes.
in 2020, we've sort of gone too far the other way. We don't show him at all. So voters have not been reminded that his message really has not changed a whole lot since 2015.
He's gotten worse. I mean, I've been covering his rallies since 2015. And I remember I was working at CNN back then, and people would not leave early. They would stick around to hear what he had to say. And I remember being out in Iowa before the caucuses back in 2016 and talking with some of the folks who were there. And I was surprised at the number of people who were not Trump fans. They were just there to see the show. This time around, and especially after January 6, I've been covering Republicans and conservatives for years now. I go to CPAC routinely, which is the big annual conference here in suburban Washington. I saw people leaving his big CPAC speech early. The staging around his events, where there's the advance work, as we say in politics, where they're bringing in the dividing walls so that it looks like the room is full. They're boxing things out. The energy is gone, and he's slipping too. The one thing which I didn't hear, and I think would have been more damaging to him had it happened, are these moments where he phases out in his campaign rallies, where he garbles things. He talks about immigrants coming in from Venezuela, and then he goes,
He didn't
"Oh."
do that last night. There were no real gaffes. I mean, there were certainly some things that were not true. The pets in Springfield and the abortion, where how babies are executed after they're born. That's simply not true. So, but
Yep.
he didn't confuse names or didn't sort of trail off like Joe Biden did in his first debate.
Right.
But it seemed like the strategy was whenever Kamala Harris, who really did not answer very many questions in this debate last night, and that we'll get to that, but that's sort of lost. Whenever she was put on the defensive, she had a ready sort of tell. Just look
Yeah.
at his rallies. People are leaving early. Or, he got $400 million from his dad and things like that. And he couldn't resist. She was that was that was a de You think that was a deliberate strategy? When you're asked about immigration, use this. When you're asked about inflation, use this. When you're asked about your changing stances, use this. Do you think that was a deliberate strategy?
Absolutely. And I think this kind of goes to whether or not we might see another debate. That was a couple of aces up the sleeve. You could see that she was ready to deliver that line and looking for the right place to do it. And it worked commandingly. Potentially historically so. But you have to wonder if they could do that again. And I almost think that there's more incentive for Harris not to do another debate than there is for Trump not to do another debate, because with that performance that Trump put in last night, he can only go up from there and would seemingly put more attention on Harris to answer more questions. So I suspect that we don't see another debate after this.
Tom LoBianco is the founder of 24 Site News on Substack and author of the Mike Pence biography, Piety, Mike Pence biography, Piety and Power. He joins us here on All Sides. Mike Thompson sitting in for Anna Staver. We're talking about last night's debate between former President Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. Immigration was there was a lot of talk about immigration, and that is a big issue for voters. And how do you think it? In hindsight, when the dust settles, Harris was vulnerable on that. The Biden administration is vulnerable on that. The numbers do not lie. There was a huge influx at the southern border. It's slowed now. But Trump still was hammering that whenever he could.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those two key areas that poll well for Republicans. And this is, you know, for Trump, and it's the economy and immigration. And, you know, for the Democrats, it tends to be more abortion, reproductive rights, and democracy. January 6th, the fallout from that. So you could see him really leaning into that. But, you know, I was really interested. And, you know, again, I think this is why we won't see the Harris campaign do another debate. You know, there was the question of they kind of had the same weaknesses, you know, where she would point out and say, hey, you had 4 years to do this and you didn't do this. And on immigration, he could come back and say, hey, why did you wait until 6 months before the election to really start working on this bipartisan immigration bill?
She was asked that by the moderator, and she didn't answer it.
Exactly. And I think that not answering is still a central weakness for Harris. You know, you look at, you know, especially, you know, these key battlegrounds. I mean, right next door, you know, over in Pennsylvania, just over the state line. Talk about fracking. You know, what is the, you know, what is her position there? And Trump tried to do that, talking about the fallout from George Floyd, trying to tag her with stuff, a lot of which was demonstrably incorrect, but plays to his base. And I just don't know that the Harris people are going to want to put her out there again to answer that. And I think, just as a reporter, I think we do need to hear more from Harris on what her policies would be, what her current stances are. And they can change, and that's normal. God knows his stances have changed over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the debate, I've always said that, you know, people say the economy is the number one issue in this race. It's certainly right there. But I've always said the number one issue is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And last night, the incumbent president was not, obviously, the vice president, Kamala Harris. The incumbent president was Donald Trump, because we were reliving his first term in office and, you know, the insurrection and the pandemic. And so she made the issue about Donald Trump in this debate.
Brilliant. It was, you know, look at all the efforts. And again, you know, so much history in this race. I mean, I'm just thinking back over this. I don't think there were any questions about his existing criminal trials, the pending criminal trials.
She mentioned it, but he was never asked about it specifically.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much around him, and there's so much history that we're dealing with. And if you look at, and, you know, this is why, you know, you see one of these overarching things in the polling where, you know, the group that used to be called double haters, you know, folks that were sitting this out, they were looking at someone who allegedly did eat a dog, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. There was that story many months ago. And they wanted to change agent. And remarkably, as you point out here, a member of the current administration is able to make herself into the change agent by pointing backward to the guy and reminding people, hey, we had 4 years of this, and it ended in COVID in January 6th.
Yeah, you wonder, I mean, this will be a distant memory by Saturday. You know, it really will be. And, you know, they had past debates with Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton won by 16% margin that she won one of those debates, and Donald Trump went on to win. How quickly before we all forget this, and what has to happen next if Harris has momentum now to keep that momentum, and how can Donald Trump recover if he has lost a step here?
Well, she has to be out there. You know, Hillary, there were a couple key central problems that Hillary Clinton had in 2016. I mean, number one was neglecting the Rust Belt states and just taking that as granted. So that was a key misstep on their point. And she was going into that race was historically, politically speaking, well defined. Rightly or wrongly, nationwide, people had very, very strong preconceived notions of who Hillary Clinton was. But they hurt themselves a lot by keeping her out of the press, keeping her out of the public, not doing a lot of engagement. Trump was so prolific, and you see this repeatedly, especially when he's in trouble. I mean, look at last night. A former president of the United States walked into the spin room to try to grab cameras, a sign of weakness in a campaign. Harris has to go out there, and she has to keep the attention on herself. Trump is a master at drawing attention, and he does increasingly stunning things just to grab that attention. And then, lies about what happened in these events. I mean, that's why he did the Arlington Cemetery thing.
She's. I mean, this maybe this is the start. This campaign is only half over when you think about it,
That's
and
right.
so we're at halftime. So maybe the halftime adjustments will start to kick in here. Tom Libianco, he's the founder of 24 Site News on Substack and the author of the Mike Pence biography, Piety and Power. Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
When we come back, we'll dig deeper into what happened last night and what it might mean going forward when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
This is All Sides with Anna Staver on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Anna today. We are talking about what happened last night, about last night, to coin a phrase. The first debate between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. Of course, it's the second presidential debate in this cycle, but the first one did not end well for Joe Biden, and that cleared the way for Kamala Harris to take the stage last night. Voters were hoping to hear more from the vice president on her vision for America. They were hoping to hear some specifics, and they were hoping to hear how she would explain how she has changed her mind on certain things. And here's how she answered a question on her changing policy positions.
So my values have not changed, and I'm going to discuss every one of the, at least every point that you've made. But in particular, let's talk about fracking because we're here in Pennsylvania. I made that very clear in 2020. I will not ban fracking. I have not banned fracking as Vice President of the United States. And in fact, I was the tie-breaking vote on the Inflation Reduction Act, which opened new leases for fracking.
So there's Kamala Harris on fracking. She did not get to those other points, at least not in that exchange, and maybe she'll get to those in the coming weeks. The other question was, would Donald Trump move beyond 2020? Would he be able to lay a path forward rather than re-litigate the election of 2020? And he was asked whether he takes responsibility or had regrets for anything he did or did not do on January 6th.
I had nothing to do with that other than they asked me to make a speech. I showed up for a speech. I said, I think it's going to be big. I went to Nancy Pelosi and the mayor of Washington, D.C., and the mayor put it back in writing, as you know. I said, you know, this is going to be a very big rally or whatever you want to call it. And again, it wasn't done by me. It was done by others.
A bit of revisionist history there by the former president. He was just asked to give a speech on January 6th. That's all that was. Anyway, that's what we're here this hour, talking about the debate, digesting what happened and where we go from here. Joining us now is Wake Forest University political communications expert Nate French. Professor French, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
You know, you're an expert on political communication, and debates are always a great example of how candidates use various things. But where would last night's debate rank on both candidates' use of communication? How did they communicate to the American public, and how remarkable was it?
I think it was a remarkable debate. As you mentioned before, this has been just a season of amazing presidential debates. I mean, watching Joe Biden leave was a shock. I think also last night was a shock as well. Trump had had more experience on the debate stage, and so that, of course, was an advantage to him. I think that it was a bit of a shocker for individuals watching it. The look, let's just go with the look, was to see who would appear more presidential. In that space, just to get the start of it, you see Harris as the aggressor who moves to shake his hand. She takes the middle first. Okay, that's the aggressive stance that political nerds like me like to watch. But as you're watching through the debate, you see her able to take more control of the debate with her nonverbals and her facial expressions and her engagement. She repeatedly put Trump on the defensive, made him into a more aggressive space, and that aggression in his nonverbals result in a scowl, result in him looking angry, clearly moments where he was flustered or off his game, as it were. And so I think that in the grand scheme of debates for this season, it's going to be high up there, and the Biden-Trump debate was already high. I mean, we've had just a moment of a crazy season.
I mean, that's why you really do need that split screen. There was some debate years ago whether is it fair to have a split screen and see candidates' reaction to the other candidates' statements. But last night, one of the most memorable poses, you could call it, is when Kamala Harris is looking at Donald Trump with basically her chin in her hands. Like, it was just such a simple expression of disbelief. How do you make what she did there when he was talking, her nonverbal communication?
I think the times that there's always, at least for me, I think it's not in your best interest to crosstalk anyone in a debate. You want to keep your mouth closed and listen. So those brief moments where she was making statements were the wrong way to go. I do think, though, the fresh facial expressions were curious because it communicates at one point, this is amusing, this is funny. You know, you look at the eating cats. And other points, it communicates a true anger and hostility when she gets to abortion. It communicates a compassion that the audience could see. And so you saw those particular things. And I think in that sense, she got across what she wanted to, that I'm comfortable in this space. And that is, I'm comfortable on the presidential stage. That's what she wanted to get across. And I think she did a good job doing that.
You know,
even though Harris is running for president, we have to remember that she was a senator, and we don't know a lot of our senators, right? We see them a clip, maybe, but we don't know their names. We don't follow them, particularly if they're not our senator. And then she moved to be the vice president. And the vice president is a tremendously powerful job, but it is oft ignored. We don't know what the vice president is doing because the vice president can't do anything, you know, on their own. And so she is having to introduce herself to the American public. They're getting a look at her to say, could she be the president?
Did she do that last night? Because she was still short on specifics. She did mention the $50,000 tax credit for startups, small businesses. She mentioned the child care tax credit. I think she mentioned the help for first-time home buyers, but that was about as specific as she got. She did not distance herself from Joe Biden on immigration, on the withdrawal from Afghanistan. How did she do in satisfying the concerns of Americans to say, you know, I really don't know what she's all about?
Well, I think given the 2 minutes she had to articulate any point, what she did was give herself a good first start. Did people say they wanted to hear more? If she wins that, that's all she could look to win in this debate. I've heard a lot of commentators say, well, you know, we needed to hear more specifics, more detail. And I often talk to my students about like tax policy when they say, we need to hear what's specific about tax policy. And I asked them, how long is the IRS tax code? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, it's over 75,000 pages. How specific do you want to get? I think what she had to go for is, and I watched some of the individuals after the debate say things like, well, now I'm interested in hearing more. Now I think she's at least crossed that first barrier. And that's what she really wanted to do. Was she going to be competent on stage and somebody that we think could stand there? If she gets more people to listen to her, and I think she's done that, that's the good way to go. It's no surprise that Harris would ask for a second debate. She is the lesser known candidate, right? The true shock would have been if Trump would be to give her a second debate.
Now, our last guest doesn't think there will be a second debate. He said it would be perhaps unwise for her to ask for a second debate, but we still have, what, 7 weeks left? I mean, we have a long time. And I, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to forget about this debate by Sunday, you know.
I think you're right. I would agree with your prior guest that it's unlikely to have a second debate. It's to me, it was smart for her to ask for one, primarily because she thought or feels like she won, as did many of the people who watched the debate. Also, if it's going to draw 50, 60 million people, that's 50, 60 million people to look at her, and many for the first time. As a radio host and doing Empire, you get to talk about these things all the time. I get to do this in a full 15-week political communication class meeting twice a week. The average American person isn't so focused on this. They don't come to this all the time or every day. And so for them, it's, wow, now I'm getting all this crap in the mail, must be the presidential election again. And they look down and they read a two-line sentence and say, is this person good enough? These debates where they watch them are those moments. I would be shocked if Trump gave another one.
Well, unless it was on Fox News. I think if Fox News were to come through, I don't see Kamala Harris agreeing to go on Fox News.
Well, because he doesn't even want Fox News. Look at what he asked for specifically. He kind of discounted Bret Baier and the A-team of their interviewers, saying, I'll do it on Fox News only if we have Hannity and Laura Ingraham. So that goes even beyond you just want Fox News. You want your sycophants to be the moderators.
Yeah. We're talking with Nate French. He is a political communications expert and professor at Wake Forest University in North Carolina. We're talking about last night's debate between former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. One of the goals of the Trump campaign was to make this debate, make the campaign about Kamala Harris. That did not happen. Last night was about Donald Trump because he kept taking the bait whenever she threw a little, you know, little thing out there about his crowd sizes or his dad's money or things like that. Mm-hmm. Was that obviously planned by Harris? Why wasn't he prepared to answer it that way or ignore those little trip ups?
I think we have to be honest with ourselves about who the candidate is. We heard all the last time people say, let Trump be Trump. Well, once you let Trump be Trump, he's an undisciplined candidate. And that has been beneficial to him in many places. People liked what he would say. But when you have an undisciplined candidate, if I make a crack about, oh, you inherited your money that you got from your father, if that gets under your skin, all of a sudden in your 2-minute response, you took a minute of it talking about how you grew up and that didn't happen, right? If the question is about what happens January 6th and I say, oh, what did you do there? And I just look at you funny and you take 30 seconds to respond to that, the lack of discipline shows up. And so I think if there was anything that Trump wanted to do to kind of put Kamala Harris in the box, that's not what happened. I saw one commentator call it a bait and slap, not even a bait and switch, but just letting you walk into a space with abortion, letting you walk into the space with January 6th, letting you walk into the space about crowd size and letting you, I mean, for God's sake, walk into the space about eating animals, right? I mean, these were moments that took time, even though he got more time. 5 to 9 minutes more, depending on which measure you believe. He wasted a lot of time and he got caught flat-footed and making responses that suggested that he was more limited than people thought he were. He did not look strong in this space.
We talked in the last segment about immigration. Immigration kept coming up over and over again, as Kamala Harris predicted in the early part of the debate. And that is, he's tough on immigration, which Americans apparently want their president to be tough on immigration. Did he sell people on that?
I think he's pushed immigration, but what a lot of Americans are hearing now is that he's tough on immigration across the southern border. And that's an interesting argument because that means you're not just tough on immigration. You have a particular problem with the southern border. He hasn't talked about how individuals who come in with visa overstays. He hasn't talked about individuals that fly into the country. He hasn't even talked as if we've had individuals coming from the water or from the northern border. It's a very, very specific focus on the southern border. I think that his going back to that point, which he's going to continue to go to, I don't think it surprised anyone. It didn't bring in any new people. And I think it just hardened the people who were already on that particular space. We have to be honest about what the Trump campaign is interested in. They are not interested in moving to the middle. They are not interested in broadening the base. They're interested in getting more of his base voters out. That's the push, and that's what he's going for.
Is that going to be enough, though? Because I think that you're right. If you're with Trump, he could have done anything, you know, unimaginable on the stage last night, and it would not have mattered. They will vote for him no matter what. But it's the reluctant Trump Republicans. It's the small sliver of the American public in these seven or eight states that are going to decide this election who maybe are wavering on supporting Kamala Harris. Where are they this morning, do you think?
I think those people that are wavering on supporting Kamala Harris are at least interested in thinking about her. Mm-hmm. And I think if they were wavering on that space, that they're listening to her more and have even that many more questions to ask, right? They might even be on the webpage saying, what is her policy on XYZ, if they're truly interested in that. Mm-hmm. We know that Trump has a floor of about 46% to 47%, and that's a hell of a floor. What he needed and what he had with Biden was, no matter where his floor was, if he could get his base out, what he knew is that Biden lacked excitement from the Democratic base. That was likely that Biden wasn't going to move people. He was going to win the major cities, but he wasn't going to win the larger cities where a lot of individuals wouldn't come out to vote. That would take North Carolina out of play. That would take Georgia out of play, right? Because it's one thing if you say, I can win in Atlanta, but can you win anything else? Or can you decrease those margins? I don't think he has that now. His base is still there, and they're going to be there across the rural communities and a lot of the rural counties. But if Kamala Harris gets those individuals who are thinking about it in Savannah, right, those individuals who are thinking about it in the Black Belt of rural Georgia, those individuals thinking about it in Charlotte, North Carolina, those individuals thinking about it in Pittsburgh, right, all of a sudden that these three states go and play, Phoenix goes and play in a very different way. And you're not talking about, I need 200,000 new voters. You're talking about, I need 25,000. You're talking about how huge the Taylor Swift endorsement was. And we're actually having to talk about that.
11:38 a.m., 39 minutes into the show, when we have finally mentioned the big news of the day, and that is Taylor Swift, the childless cat lady's endorsement of Kamala Harris after the debate, but prompted by an AI that had her endorsing Trump. But anyway, don't discount that. Don't discount that at all. I want to, as a communications expert, I want to spend a couple of minutes on how you think the moderators did. They fact-checked him. CNN made a conscious decision. They said it before the debate. We're not going to fact-check. We're going to leave it to the candidates to fact-check each other. ABC, on, I think, maybe four or five occasions, fact-checked mm-hmm. Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. I think if we go back and look at the tape, they fact-checked both candidates. But what happened is, when they fact-checked Donald Trump, you're moving into issues of people eating cats and dogs, right? And then he argues with the moderator. When they fact-checked him on the issue of abortion, right, it was the notion of people committing infanticide. And they kind of point out that that's not illegal in any state. They fact-checked Kamala Harris on fracking, right? They fact-checked her on issues of gun control, that she was with kind of seizing of guns. But those were so much smaller issues that they almost don't even resonate with the people that watched it. I think the moderators did a pretty good job. I think I'd give them credit for the space. I think it's always an issue if you start fact-checking any candidate, because this is how we know, at least on the prof side, that we know people lost the debate. You start complaining about the questions.
Yeah, when you complain about the referees.
Complaining they should have asked this. And watch this. When somebody says, they should have asked this, and then they provide an answer, which is trying to introduce a new argument into the discourse that your candidate did not produce. Mm-hmm. Right. This is the first time that we've seen a presidential candidate actually go to the spin room. And I know that his staff probably fell all over themselves trying to hold him back.
Yeah.
And yet he went to the spin room and says, hey, this is my best debate ever. You're like, wow, that's going to be a surprising commentary coming up.
Well, he's always trying to be the story, whether it's good news or bad news. He figures he can get some value out of being in the headlines and getting those sound bites on there. Nate French, go ahead.
Let me say this, that we need to keep in mind that Trump is right about that, right? That he gets a lot of press. People complained about the media in 2016 because even those stories critical of Trump online, and they had his photo there, they had his picture there. For the individual that wasn't engaged, you would see stories on politics and you would see eight stories about Trump. You don't even know who else is running, but you know Trump is.
Yep.
And even though people might criticize him, I mean, there's still going to be at least that academic consideration of, is there too many stories about Trump? Do people still see his name if you're a light engager? You just saw the cover of the paper. Mm-hmm. You just saw the images, right, that come across in a quick feed, and you didn't read the story. It looks as if there's one person there. So there's an argument there about, you know, dominating media presence and persistence.
No such thing as bad news. Just spell my name right. Mm-hmm. Nate French, political communications expert and professor at Wake Forest University, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been great.
Appreciate your time. We'll continue our discussion of last night's debate and, of course, discuss fully the impact of Taylor Swift's endorsement of Kamala Harris when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
There's an effort in Scotland to protect hedgehogs. After all, they're cute. But they also steal bird eggs and imperil other animal populations. So the question is, do humans have the right to kill one animal to protect another? Tomorrow on All Sides with Anna Staver, we'll explore the moral complexities of animal control and conservation. That's 10 to noon on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Anna Staver on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Anna today. This hour, we're looking back at last night's monumental debate, a critical moment in the 2024 presidential campaign. Kamala Harris, the vice president, met former President Donald Trump on the stage in Philadelphia, and it was must-see TV, and I'd have to say it definitely lived up to the hype. It was interesting political theater. Couple of highlights. One of the issues in this campaign and one of the issues that was raised during the debate was the Project 2025, which critics say lays out what Donald Trump would do in a second term. And here's how the president, former president, discussed 2025.
Number one, I have nothing to do, as you know, and as she knows better than anyone, I have nothing to do with Project 2025. That's out there. I haven't read it. I don't want to read it purposely. I'm not going to read it. This was a group of people that got together. They came up with some ideas, I guess some good, some bad, but it makes no difference. I have nothing to do. Everybody knows I'm an open book. Everybody knows what I'm going to do. Cut taxes very substantially and create a great economy like I did before.
The backdrop to all of the debate last night was President Trump's legal troubles, and Kamala Harris raised those issues.
Well, I think this is so rich coming from someone who has been prosecuted for national security crimes, economic crimes, election interference, has been found liable for sexual assault, and his next big court appearance is in November at his own criminal sentencing.
Kamala Harris pointing out Donald Trump's legal troubles that still are very much in the backdrop to this campaign and really kind of played not a huge role last night, but they were there. We are discussing the debate, and joining us now is Tammy Brown, professor of history at Howard University. Professor Brown, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You know, heading into last night, what were your expectations for Kamala Harris?
To be honest, I was telling family and friends that I really thought she was going to annihilate, that's the word I used, annihilate Donald Trump. And she lived up to my expectations.
Why were you so confident? Because there are a lot of folks who, you know, remember her 2020 campaign and some other interviews she's done where she hasn't done so well. And she really has not done a whole lot of critical sessions in the media in their short campaign that as it has been this summer. What gave you that confidence?
So as historians, we love to observe change over time. And since Kamala was nominated, actually, I think she has demonstrated a very swift change over time, which is being her full, authentic self, walking into her power. And there are a few articles that I read when she first became the official nominee that said it being vice president in the backdrop, she was really deferring to President Biden, and that's what vice presidents do. Also, there were, as you put it, a few interviews and conversations that she might not have been at her best, but I think she is a smart person. She learns over time, and she realizes in this historic moment in particular, being put against a felon, a former president who behaves in a way that is not very presidential, that is disrespectful, and that the American public have praised him for his in-your-face, say it like it is, manner. I think what has empowered Kamala to be the best presidential candidate is she has been empowered to be her full, authentic self. And that's what we saw. We saw the prosecutor Kamala. We saw the confident Kamala. We saw the Howard graduate Kamala. You know, she comes from a legacy of Black excellence and intelligence and achievement, and she's walking in that power.
You know, people often compare her current campaign, as short as it has been, to what she her campaign in 2020, where she didn't really make it to the, even to Iowa. I have always said that in that campaign, a primary candidate who's not as well known as say, you know, Joe Biden was at that campaign, you're trying to break through. I mean, you're trying to do whatever you can to break through when you have 10 or 12 people on that stage. She doesn't have to do that anymore. I mean, we'll talk about some of her changing positions in a moment, but do you agree that she's free to be the candidate? She's the woman now. She's the nominee. She is the competitor for the presidency of the United States.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I think something pretty marvelous has happened. The Democratic Convention, and I confess, full disclosure, I'm a Democrat. I'm representing myself. I'm not representing any institution. I've watched a lot of political debates over the years and political conventions. There was something quite different about this political convention. The language itself that was used by many of the speakers, including Michelle Obama, was more down to earth. It was more blunt. It was frank because the stakes are quite high. As Kamala Harris said yesterday, critics have said that if Donald Trump is elected again, our democracy might not survive. And because the stakes are so high, and because we do know that Donald Trump has appealed to, let's say, a swath of Americans who love his in-your-face, tell it like it is manner, I saw that happen in the Democratic Convention from multiple speakers. Tim Walz, you know, as the vice presidential candidate, I think he did an excellent job of humanizing himself, you know, making him an everyday person. And even Obama's comment about his flannel shirts depicts him as a person of the people, right? He's more concerned with helping his constituents than dressing well and getting a fashion advisor. The same with Kamala. If you don't mind, I would like to dig into what she said during the debate yesterday, her use of repetition. I do have a love for literature and I'm a poet, and she used repetition very well. She touched on the point in the Democratic convention that her only client has been the people, and she repeated that same message in the debate yesterday. And I think that's powerful. And I think it's also in reference to a historical figure she admires and she duly gives credit to, Shirley Chisholm, the first Black woman to seriously run for president. Shirley Chisholm, Barbadian American woman, also daughter of immigrants like Kamala Harris, repeatedly said, you know, I'm Black and proud. I'm a woman. I'm proud of that. But I am a candidate of all Americans.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump is known as the marketing and branding genius. But if you look at what Kamala Harris did last night in the debate, turn the page, same old playbook, the Trump sales tax, there were a lot of branding slogans that she threw out there, not unintentionally. They were very carefully crafted, and she did a very good job of doing that. And Donald Trump could not match her. He didn't, to his credit, really didn't name call. He called her father a Marxist, but that was as far as he got on the name calling goes. But, you know, a lot of people still like that attitude that Donald Trump has. And we've been down this road before. Hillary Clinton won the debate in 2016 and lost the election. Will this matter? I mean, Trump's people are with him no matter what. And there are a lot of people who are mad right now with rising grocery prices and inflation and the immigration situation. They're going to say, you know what? I'm going to go with this guy because he's tougher.
I think that's an excellent question. The question you pose is the same question I've been having with family and friends all week. One thing I will say is this. I do think the Democrats are too smart to make the same mistake they made with Hillary Clinton. I think it's very obvious that even though Kamala Harris did annihilate Donald Trump in last night's debate, it's still obvious that we have to run fully through the finish line, leaning into the tape. So, you know, there was a criticism that Hillary Clinton was a little bit too presumptuous, that she didn't try hard enough at the end. She just thought she had the election in the bag. I don't think the Democrats will make that mistake again, even though her showing, Kamala Harris's showing yesterday, hands down, her brilliance, her intellect, her knowledge base is far superior to Donald Trump's. But I have a hunch, and by the way, I have been sitting in on some of the famous Sunday Zoom meetings called We Win with Black Women. And those Zoom meetings are about Black women across the country organizing and fundraising to support Kamala Harris's victory. And I'm hearing the same message there, that we can't be presumptuous. You have to run and lean into the tape. So I do think Kamala Harris can win as long as the Democrats continue serious, pragmatic efforts to get out the vote. We know that when President Obama won, let's say in Ohio, that's my home state, he was very good at organizing, carpooling, caravans, and getting the people to the polls.
Well, we'll talk about Joe Biden for a sec. You mentioned that last night Kamala Harris was her authentic self, and you also mentioned that she has perhaps been deferring to President Biden during her time as vice president. President Biden's very unpopular. He's not, his favorability ratings are just slightly better than Donald Trump's. Does Kamala Harris have to do more to separate herself from Joe Biden?
I think that is a good question. I think she should continue to do what she did yesterday. And what she did yesterday, whenever Donald Trump tried to bring up Biden and blame her for his leadership, she paused. And I think there's some eloquence even in that pause. And she said, well, I am not Joe Biden and I am not you. I am Kamala Harris. And this is what I think. And I do think she should continue to refine her own stances on everything from, let's say, foreign policy to the economy. I think she does an excellent job with women's rights, reproductive rights, the way that she talks about women should have control over their bodies.
That was one of her strongest points, I think, moments last night. She was ready for it. But
eloquent
on
that.
The reproductive rights, Donald Trump is kind of in a box here because he, you know, nominated these guys to the Supreme Court, and now he's losing at the ballot box across the country, and he has to sort of find a way out, and he really couldn't do that last night.
Right.
Should she debate him again? Should Kamala Harris debate Donald Trump again? Should Donald Trump debate her again? What's the pros and cons for the candidates?
If I were Donald Trump, I'd be afraid to debate her again. I think Kamala Harris has nothing to lose by debating him again. She was obviously beyond prepared for this debate last night. I think she would win another debate. And so that would only hopefully shore up more votes for her. But as you said earlier, and I'm going to give you an anecdote. Do you mind if I give you an anecdote?
Quickly, we only just have about a minute left.
Okay. So I talked to everyone. I'm a chatty Patty, and I was talking to a Black woman cashier at the grocery store. And when I was so excited when Kamala Harris was nominated, this was the week of the Democratic convention. I felt uplifted. I felt uplifted by all the personal stories that people told. I actually cried when they talked about gun violence issues, and I felt hopeful that if she's elected, things will change. But this Black woman cashier latched on to one of Donald Trump's speaking points and said, Kamala Harris has let in immigrants that have taken our jobs. And when she said our, she meant working class Black people. And we went back and forth in a dialogue. But what I took away from that is no matter how well Kamala Harris does in the next debate, if it happens, the Democrats need feet on the pavement. They need to knock on doors. They need to make phone calls to get the people out to vote.
We shall see. As we have mentioned, this campaign is only half over because
Sure.
it didn't start until late June. So
Sure.
thanks very much, Tammy Brown, professor of history at Howard University. Thanks very much for joining us here on All Sides.
Thank you.
That will do it for All Sides with Anna Staver. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Anna today. And of course, we will continue to cover this campaign backwards and forwards, all the twists and turns. And we know there are many more to come. This is All Sides with Anna Staver on 89.7 NPR News.